Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome to Cup of Cubby Blue. The Cubs split a series with a historically bad Marlins team because the Marlins always play the Cubs like it's the World Series, home for Cubs news, notes, and banter. We're proudly affiliated with the Fans First Sports Network. I'm Sarah Sanchez, and as always, I am joined by Danny Rocket. We're going to break it all down. Danny, I sort of feel like it was a win for the Cubs to split this series with the Marlins, but also the Marlins are like as bad as the Rockies, so it feels like maybe the Cubs should have swept them. I don't know. What are you thinking after the weekend series?
They absolutely should have swept them or at least taken three or four. You got home cooking. That's supposed to be in your favor. That didn't work out. The Marlins started the season 0-9. But when I do look at their players, they are actually seemingly better than the Rockies. They've got some good young hitters. They put the bat on the ball. And, you know, sometimes against Kyle Hendricks, it was falling in. Against a lot of our guys, it was falling in. Even on cold days, but you're right. The Marlins always play the Cubs tough. It's one of those teams, kind of like the Diamondbacks, that always seem to be a thorn in our side. But I am disappointed from the weekend. I do think we should have taken three or four, whether it would have been Sunday's game yesterday where they fell behind and couldn't crawl back into the game, or the blown loss during the doubleheader. I felt like come on. It's the freaking Marlins. You're supposed to win these games. Are you going to be competitive or not? I don't know. I was a little disappointed. I know a split shouldn't be the worst thing in the world, and it's not. At least we didn't get swept. How'd you feel?
Yeah. I mean, it felt, I don't know, man. Like, there were moments of the series I felt good about the Cubs, and there were moments of the series I felt bad about the Cubs. And let's just jump right in. Shota Imanaga, still shoving. Absolutely adore him. Dude is an ace. I think I mentioned this on the show last time, but over a pitcher list, if you go look at Nick Pollock's ranks, he has tiers, and one of those tiers is ace is going to ace. And Shota is just below that tier right now, and I really feel like Shota has done everything in his power to join that tier. What do you think of Shota?
He is the throwing philosopher. That's what I think of him. No, he's what a great start to his Cubs career, and I'm so glad of that because Cub fans are notoriously horrible at letting primacy bias go. Maybe other fan bases are like this, but I only know about Cubs fans. And so if Shota had come from Japan and been bad in April, like let's say he had Kyle Hendricks' start and it was like he had a 12 ERA, everybody would have been losing their minds. And then he could have ended the season with an ERA of 3.5, but it wouldn't matter. Everybody would think he was terrible because of what happened in April. Shota Imanaga, everybody will now give him all of the chances in the world. So when he does eventually have a bad start, and every pitcher has a bad start in the season, that goes the whole season. Now everybody will be like, oh, that was a clunker for Imanaga, and it's not a big deal. And because everybody already loves him. You've got all the boys out there in the bleachers with their Shota paint on their bellies. And then he met him at Obvious Shirts. If you don't know the story, Obvious, these guys took their shirts off in the bleachers. It said Shota on their stomachs. And Joe from Obvious Shirts found out about it, made all of them shirts, and then Shota found out about him. I don't know what order all this happened in, but anyway, it was a giant Shota shirt love fest, and everybody is, well, Mike Prasnowski, my friend, is jealous because he's like, I take my shirt off in the bleachers all the time. Nobody cares about what I do. And I'm like, well, you didn't write anything on your chest that, you know, that was your fail. But so we're having a lot of fun out there, you know, with Shota. I mean, people love him. People love him, and he's good. I saw I had up close seats right behind home plate watching Shota on Saturday night with our friend Larry Hawley, Crawley. Hey, they rhyme. I didn't realize that all night. I was hanging out with my rhyming friends, Crawley and Hawley. But it just goes how it should. He's quick. He's efficient. He seems like he knows what he's doing. Never feels like he's nibbling. He always feels like he's in control of the game, unlike every other pitcher we have. So, like, he's a freaking joy. I love Shota Imanaga.
Yeah, I love Shota Imanaga, too. And I'm going to spout off a couple of stats here. I have also sat behind home when Shota was pitching. I was there for his debut, his major league debut. And it was a thing to behold, people. He has thrown 21 and one-third innings so far. He has a 25.6% K rate off a 2.4% walk rate. The man does not walk people. That's crazy. His ERA is currently sitting at 0.84. He has already been worth 0.8 wins above replacement this season. And if you are a fantasy baseball type like I am, you know that he has been one of the best pitchers in fantasy baseball so far this season. In fact, according to the Fangraphs player rater, which is basically, it looks at the auction calculator values and sees what players have been worth so far. Shota Imanaga has been the fifth best starting pitcher in baseball so far with a value right now of $25. So that's great stuff from Shota. Really feels like the Cubs got a steal here.
Yeah, I was talking about it all weekend, or at least that night, you know, about Shota. And I'm like, when I saw those numbers in the first place, just based on what he had done in Japan and how many big games he had pitched in, I think we talked about it on the show. When we saw those numbers, we're like, wow, this is quite affordable for somebody who might be really, really good. And so far, it's so good. You're right. It's a steal. Feels like a steal.
It does. Let's talk about another guy who's been good, who came back to the Cubs this week. Jameson Taillon looked really good in his first outing with the team. And thank God, because, you know, I wrote a piece a while back looking at the Cubs' schedule when Justin Steele got hurt. This is not an easy part of the schedule. Like the last two seasons, the Cubs have started out with the hardest part of their schedule front-loaded in April and May. They lost their ace for that. We had no idea what Shota was going to be at that point in time. And Jameson Taillon on the IL, if you have Shota and J-Mo and they're both pitching like aces, and then you add Steele back into that, this team looks like a playoff contender. I had no idea any of that was going to happen when I wrote that piece. Danny, what do you see from Taillon?
Yeah, I mean, just doing what we would have hoped he would have always done his entire Cubs career so far. there's an example of somebody who started off pretty badly as a Cub. You know, his first half with the Cubs was pretty terrible, and everybody was like, oh God, 4 years of this, and he righted the ship, and now it seemed like the ship is still righted. So he's coming back from the injury. What do you go, five innings? You hoping to strike
that out?
Oh,
I just pulled that down because I was going to look up something else. I don't remember if it was five or if it was just over five, but he definitely qualified for the win, I think.
Yeah, so, you know, so great stuff from him to come back in that.
Five innings, you're right. Five innings, four strikeouts. I think he got the win. Good stuff. Continue,
and the Cubs, Cubs put up a lot of runs on that game. So that was on Friday's game. So that was the only game that they really, that their offense, well, they exploded. What did they get? Nine runs, I think. And then the other ones, they were pretty tight, but it got a lot colder at Wrigley Fields for the Saturday doubleheader. But yeah, with Tyone out there, I mean, you couldn't have asked for more from a bounce back performance from an injury. You just couldn't. He's totally. Got it. We need him so bad to eat innings too. Oh my God, we need him.
Absolutely. And one thing I want to note about Tyone that he talked about after the game, but it just jumps off the page when you look at his pitch mix. He threw that curveball about 23% of the time. That was up from he threw it about 14.5% of the time last season. He said that he wasn't feeling it last season, that it didn't feel like a good weapon to him this season. He felt like so far, at least, like it's a pitch he can command well. So that's potentially interesting news because it could mean that we're just going to see a different Jameson Tyone this season.
And hopefully a better Jameson Tyone because, you know.
Hard to get worse.
Yeah. Well, oh, no, it could get worse. We were seeing that with our man Kyle Hendricks. But
let's just go to the bad news now.
Just go to it? All right.
Yeah, we can start with Kyle Hendricks. Danny, I think it's safe to say that you and I both adore Kyle Hendricks and what he's done for the Chicago Cubs. I still write him into my scorecard as Kyle with a C, like Cy Young Kyle. And I still think he should have won the Cy Young in 2016, but I understand why he didn't, because they were managing his innings in a way that just kind of sucked. I also will never, ever forgive the St. Louis Cardinals for stealing that no-hitter that he threw. He basically had a no-hitter going against them, and then I forgot the dude's name. He was one of the most Cardinal dudes ever, hit a home run, took away the no-hitter and the shutout in like the eighth or ninth inning. It was the worst, but Kyle Hendricks is not that guy right now at all. He's getting hit real hard third time through the order. He's getting hit real hard second time through the order. This was the Marlins, Danny. Like, if he can't not put up a crooked number against the Marlins, like, I really... Is Kyle Hendricks done?
I mean, it's really hard to say. I mean, it was a little bit better yesterday.
Against the Marlins.
I know. But the Marlins, that's what I'm saying. Like, the Marlins, they're an interesting team. Like, they obviously started out pretty bad, but they've got these, like, dudes that know how to, like, nickel and dime you. The Marlins, they hit a couple home runs, no doubt. But mostly they were just, like, soft, tossing it in. These were not there weren't a lot of hard hit. There were hard hit balls against Kyle. I won't say there weren't. There were. But there were a lot of nickel dime, just putting kind of wood on the ball and dumping it into the outfield. You know, and that was always Kyle's game. Maybe it was a little bit of bad luck in this one. Anyway, to me, it looked a little bit better than the last time, which I think was against the Diamondbacks, where then it was really that first time through, they hit it a little bit. Second time through, they hit it harder. Third time through, it was leaving the yard. And so we kind of saw that this time again. Very concerning. Still not good enough, but I think it was a little bit better than last time. At least the results were slightly better. I mean, he didn't give up 7 runs this time.
No, he gave up 4 runs in 4 innings. I mean, I'm looking at his game logs right now, and there's a handful of problems here. One, through 5 starts, Kyle Hendricks has given up, I can't even add all this up, so many earned runs, 28 earned runs across 21 innings pitched for a ERA of 12. Now, his FIP indicates he's been a little bit unlucky, but his FIP is still 7.78, so that's not very good either. The home runs are a massive problem. He has given up 8 of them in 21 innings. His home run to fly ball rate at the moment is 33.3%, which means a third of the fly balls that Kyle Hendricks is giving up are going over the wall. Wow. Danny, that's
insane.
Problematic, to say the least.
He leads the majors, unsurprisingly, in home runs given up.
I love Kyle Hendricks. He's faced really tough teams, except for the Marlins so far. Like, the Diamondbacks were in the World Series last year. That Padres team can rake. The Dodgers are historically good. The Rangers won the World Series. But it doesn't exactly get easier here, right? Like, his next start is going to be at Fenway. And, you know, people don't think about this, but Fenway Park is the second best offensive park in baseball after Coors Field. you don't get a ton of home runs there because of the monster, but you get a lot of batting average there because people just pepper the monster and like hit lots of extra base hits and that type of thing. It is up there with Great American Ballpark in terms of offensive playgrounds, and the Red Sox can mash. So I really don't love the idea of Kyle Hendricks against, you know, Tyler O'Neill and his 7 home runs, or Rafael Devers, one of the best hitters in the game. Like, I just, this strikes me as danger, Cubs fans, all over it.
It is. I'm actually going to Boston. I'm going to be at the Sunday night game, and please tell me that that's not Kyle Starnes. I don't think it is, right?
No, Sunday, you have a good one. You got Jordan Wicks versus Tanner Houck, and Houck has been a really good pitcher this year, so that could be fun. If you want Boston tips, let me know. I lived there for 7 years and I love that park. It is my second favorite park in baseball.
Yeah, I think we're just rolling in and out. We're going to try to get some pretty good seats because it seems like that's like the least expensive of the 3 nights. So that's lucky for me because that's the only one we're going to. But getting back to Kyle, you know, but besides being sad about it, I think about what you do with it. What do you do now? And obviously, when he starts, he's not giving the Cubs a chance to win the game. And that was the truth pretty much yesterday because the game got away from you early and then they just never got it back. And then all his other starts were just, you never were barely, although they didn't they almost win the one? And then that's when they lost the lead and the Cubs still scored. I forget what happened, but
the Dodgers game, they wound up winning. It was the game against Bobby Miller where Kyle Hendricks got kind of roasted and then and they the still Cubs won. Torched Bobby Miller. And they still wound up winning. I mean, sure. The thing I worry about the most with Hendricks right now, and I honestly can't get a quick answer to this. I was trying to look it up before the show. We were kind of chit-chatting while I was Googling this. I'm not sure if Kyle's pension has vested. He has 10-5 rights, meaning that because he's been on the same roster for 10 years, and that means he like there's like no trade stuff and those types of things. But your pension vests at a slightly different rate in terms of your experience. I remember this vividly because do you remember a few years ago, the Brewers kept Lorenzo Cain on their roster, even though he was really struggling until one day after his 10 years vested, and then they DFA'd him so that he would get his full pension. If I look at Baseball Reference, it says that Kyle has 11 years experience in the majors. That is true. He has pitched in all or part of 11 seasons. But when you go to FanGraphs, or you go to SpotTrack, which is where they do like contracty type of stuff, it says that his service time is 9.081 years. And I'm not sure if the pension vests off actual time on the roster or if it's time service time. I hope to God it is the roster answer and not the other one, because I just don't know how this team is going to keep him on the roster for an entire season if he needs a whole another year for that to vest. And I have like 9 million reasons to hate Jed Hoyer, but if he DFAs Kyle Hendricks before his pension vests, that would be reason number 9,000,001.
I don't see any reason to do that quite yet. I think there are other moves you make first. The first one is to the pen. To the pen with you, son.
He can't get outs. Why would he get outs in the bullpen?
Well, I don't know. I made a joke and they took me seriously and they thought maybe it was an interesting idea on Locked On Cubs was on last night. And I just kind of tuned in. I was like, make him the closer. They won't know what hit him with the 88.
That'd be pretty funny, actually. Yeah,
I'm like, and they're like, hey, and the point that they were making on their show last night was that you need outs, out getters. You need innings pitched. However you carve that up best, and you're making the point that Kyle doesn't get those outs. He gives up lots of hits, and no matter the game.
You could use him in a game where you're down 5, so you don't have to throw like Ben Brown there, and you don't have to throw like Drew Smyly. He could be like your guy, like, oh, clean, you're down 5.
Mop up.
Here comes Kyle Hendricks to give up 5 more.
Well, and he's like the new Drew Smyly, right? So it's like, you know.
Drew Smyly is also bad this season.
Yeah, I know. They're the same guy. One throws with the left hand, one throws with the right hand. So maybe that's how you get those 9 innings. You're like, okay, one of you guys are doing 4, one of you guys are doing 5. And that's how we're going to run one game a week. That's my answer. Those innings. And then maybe you need one more person, but I think you could piggyback that thing out. You probably lose, but maybe they pitch a no-hitter. I don't know. It's like Veteran Day. It's like Old Timers Day at the ballpark. And
it was like the Zach Davies no-hitter that everybody didn't even realize was happening because he walked six guys and everybody's like, what is going on?
No-hitters aren't that impressive. I mean, Alec Mills has a no-hitter. You know what I mean? Like, it seems like there's a lot of no-hitters. There's a lot of goofy, fluky stuff that happens in no-hitters, I think, a lot of times. You need the innings. He's stretched out enough. You're not going to send him to the minors. I don't know if it's a bad idea to like change his routine because he's been a starter this whole time, but maybe changing your routine is exactly what gets him right. And is it between the ears? Is it your arm? Is it, what is it?
I don't think it's between.
What is it?
I don't think it's between the ears. I think that mechanically, Kyle Hendricks relies on pristine command. He can't miss his spots. He has to be able to hit those corners and get them called, period, the end. That's how he has made his living as a pitcher in Major League Baseball. And right now, he is not hitting those spots. He's off a little bit. And if he's off a little bit, those all of a sudden become batting practice. I mean, it's just not, we've all been watching it. It's not fun to watch. I have a couple of thoughts. One is maybe you could use him for nine outs, sort of like how they used Javier Assad at times last year, where it's like you start one of these rookie pitchers who is pitch capped, right? So you've got like a Jordan Wicks who's only going to give you 80 pitches or whatever. So that's four innings. And then you go to three innings of Kyle. I don't love the idea of piggybacking Wicks and Kyle because they're kind of similar guys, but maybe you do it with like Ben Brown and Kyle, right? And you piggyback Wicks with Smiley and you try to like be crafty that way or something. The second thought, and this could just be a substantive problem, and I need to ask some people who would know better the answer to this question than I would, but I think it was you that I was talking to the other day about how there are some teams that have like a batting practice type of technology that will mimic the pitcher that you're about to face. And I wonder how many of the teams the Cubs have face so far that have that technology, and if that type of technology is uniquely devastating for a pitcher like Hendricks, because Hendricks is the type of, he's so different than every other major leaguer you face, right? You have to approach him very differently as a hitter because he doesn't throw 95 and he doesn't have a lot of spin. He's very much a location guy, that it seems to me exactly the type of trick that would work less well if you saw it for like 150 pitches before he faced it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I don't know when we'll ever get any information on that as to know what teams are using what, because they're all very secretive for obvious reasons, because it's just monkey see, monkey do with Major League Baseball. yeah, I mean, it's hard to know what to do with Kyle, and you know they're having the conversation with him, and you know that Kyle wants to do what's best for the Cubs, but Kyle also is going to do what's best for Kyle, which if he does need that little bit of service time, he's going to do whatever it takes to stay on this roster. And I think he's that guy anyway. He knows it's not going well. He sees the box score. He knows that these balls are flying over his head. You know, he feels terrible about it, but, You got guys behind you. You know, you've got, I mean, I wonder if you're going to, I mean, Ben Brown, they've been using him as a reliever. I think I'd like to see Ben Brown as a starter. Like, to me, the way he's pitched, he's the one I want to see if he can start the game in a way that it doesn't get out of hand. And by the fifth or sixth inning, maybe you're winning. You know, like, that doesn't happen when Kyle's on the mound. Does when Ben Brown maybe is on the mound. Instead, you're using Ben Brown in a freaking loss. You know, or you're using Ben Brown, you know, randomly every 3-4 days. They used Wisniewski. He pitched great. They sent him down, which I understood.
Yeah, that was weird.
Well, I understood because they couldn't use him for 4 more days because they pitched 4 innings because that's today's game. But why doesn't Wisniewski? I mean, really? Wisniewski would probably do at least as bad as freaking Kyle, or as good, depending,
right,
or better.
Let's do one more bit of bad news, and then we'll do good news and these previews on the flip side. Adbert Alzolay has given up 4 home runs and blown 4 saves for the Cubs. I mean, it's kind of crazy to think about. If Adbert was pitching the way that he pitched last season, this Cubs team would have only lost four games. They're actually doing quite well considering that their closer has blown four saves. It pains me because Adbert is my second favorite Cub at this moment in time. Like, it's Christopher Morel and Adbert are my dudes on this team. I love both of them a lot. I want only good things for Adbert. And I mean, when he gave up that home run to Brian De La Cruz just the other day, he just screamed into his glove. So I'm sitting on the bench in the dugout by himself, just kind of like stunned. I feel like he's not going to be the closer for a little bit, at least. We already saw Hector Neris get the shot to close. And frankly, I wouldn't mind seeing Mark Leiter get a shot either. What's going on with Adbert, Danny?
I never thought he should have been the closer, personally. I mean, but I will take responsibility for ruining Adbert Alzolay, because our friend Billy DeVore, who's on the new Nasty Boys podcast, which is a Reds podcast, also is a t-shirt maker for In the Clutch shirts. And
so you did this.
I work closely with Billy DeVore at In the Clutch, and I give him all a bunch of Cubs ideas, and sometimes they do them, sometimes they don't. And one of the things that's been going around is the people's fist, and that is the Adbert Alzolay.
We already talked about how we're not talking about this.
I know, but this is why this is my fault. I had Billy make a people's fist shirt the day it dropped. The day.
Great. Thanks, Danny.
When he blew the save. And I'm like, ugh. Fourth blown save. No, you can't have that. And I don't know if Neris is the answer, because that hasn't gone particularly well, but it certainly went better than Alzolay. What was interesting is seeing the Miami Marlins and what they throw at the back end of their bullpen, and how they throw way faster than what the Cubs throw at the end of our bullpen. And that has been the thing that's been missing for a long time. For whatever reason, the Cubs don't want to trade up for velocity, and they think they can get it done with everybody throwing some pitch they make up, the slurver or something like that. And they're like, we'll spin it up there. Nobody can touch it. Well, that's not true. And Adbert Alzolay cannot find the zone to save his freaking life. Every freaking time he starts, ball one, ball two. And now he's got to come in there and it gets hit over the fence, and then he's blown another save. And then finally, here's one thing I'll say. Craig Counsell, quick to act, told him he's not the closer. You know, no more fisting the fans with your fist of glory.
Stop. Stop it. Danny, stop.
It's all my fault. I'm very sorry, everybody. I apologize.
Do we need like an explicit language warning on this one? My God.
That is, hey, I am talking about a closer celebration.
Yeah.
What do you feel this way about fisted foul?
I think we're going to take a quick break for our sponsors. And on the flip side, we're going to talk about some batters who are raking and some batters who are less than hot. We're also going to preview this Astros and Red Sox series, but first a quick break.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
All right, we're back. It's not all terrible news. There have been some Cubs who have been doing some great things. Let's talk about Alexander Canario getting a shot to play, because Ian Happ has some left hamstring tightness that is the same hamstring that he was resting in spring training. What do we think of Canario out there so far?
Well,
Canario? Canario. Canario.
It really is Canario, but yeah, so many people are saying Canario that I find myself saying Canario, and also there's the word canary, and you know, so, but yeah, it's Canario.
Canario in the coal mine. No, I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly. The Canario in the coal mine. Oh, you know that one's coming. So, yeah, I mean, there's the one at bat where the game was on the line, and there was a runners on second and third, and less than one out. And he couldn't get the run home in the ninth inning, in the bottom of the ninth. And then Nico grounded out. And that was the loss on Saturday after Adbert blew the lead. But that is, you know, he's got to perform in those situations. He's a rookie, basically, even though he came up last year. And, you know, I'm wondering, like, maybe that at bat should have gone to somebody else. Like, even Yan Gomes, you know, like, it's weird to bet.
Okay.
But okay. You know what I mean? But Yan Gomes knows how to hit a sack fly. You know,
yeah, but Yan Gomes is also kind of cooked. I mean, Amaya's been playing a lot more lately, and that's not an accident.
I mean, technically, that should have been like somebody like Madrigal, but I think he was standing on second base at that point. You know,
I'm pretty sure Madrigal's been playing way too much for my liking, but continue. Sorry, I cut you off.
Oh, he played all day on Saturday. I was like, oh, at two different positions. I was like, what is going on? It's like the Madrigal doubleheader. Oh. No wonder we lost a game. So, Canario, you know, I'm glad he's up. I'm sad that he's blocked in many ways by Ian Happ and the fact that they have Bellinger and Saya, because we got to put our outfield depth to the test. And maybe this is even a good showcase for a trade if they start, you know, thinking more highly of their Kevin Alcantaras and their PCAs down the line. And
okay, I just have to say, I'm fine if they trade from their outfield depth, because you have to do that sometimes. I swear to God, if Jed Hoyer turns another 30 home run bat into a middle reliever like Jose Kwas, I'm going to lose my mind, because that is a terrible deal and you don't do it. I frankly didn't like it that much when the Cubs traded Jorge Soler for Wade Davis, and that was a legit closer that they needed for their last time in the NLCS. So under no circumstances is Canario, Alcantara, Owen Casey, any of these guys turning into the next Jose Kwas. Thank you, Jed Hoyer.
Yeah, I agree with that, because that's been frustrating. And I agree with you on that Jorge Soler trade. I didn't like that at the time. And we did need a closer, and it went fine till it didn't. But yeah, I mean, Canario, I want him to have an opportunity, and I want these guys to, until they need to be sent down and work on some more things. Like that happened to Ian Happ. Ian Happ turned into a solid, better than average ball player. Now he is having trouble staying on the field, but you know, you and I aren't the biggest Happ fans. You know, he's good. He's just not exciting.
Fine. I tweeted about this the other day because I was trying to figure out my discontent with Ian Happ. And the problem with Happ is that he's just so ever so slightly above average.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's all he's ever going to be. It's not going to be fun. It's not going to be exciting. It's going to be like a 356 on base percentage and like 20-ish home runs. And he's not going to steal enough bases. And the defense, for some reason, he keeps winning gold gloves. And I'm really not sure why. Like, they're definitely better left fielders out there. Yeah, they're better left fielders than Ian Happ. I'm sorry. I watch him run weird routes all the time. The arm is occasionally good, but not great. I mean, he's fine. And the fact that there are exciting guys in the minors who can't play left field because Ian Happ is just here and fine drives me crazy.
Well, and then it's the no trade clause that really kills you. But because you're like, if you wanted to, okay, let's say the season falls apart and you got this expiring contract, there's nothing you could do, not with any of the guys. And he's the one that you'd want to move, because left field has traditionally been a spot before the NL had the DH where you just kind of hide a guy. So if, you know, that's probably where Christopher Morel is really playing. That, you know,
and
what I
Christopher Morel is more exciting than Ian Happ, although he's been struggling lately. So let's talk about Christopher Morel for a second.
God. Yeah, he has.
He has had a real rough couple of weeks at the plate. In the last 2 weeks, he's slashing 137, 224, 235. Yikes. WRC plus of 29. There is a silver lining on this cloud, though, because he's walking 10.3% of the time in the last 2 weeks. In that time period where he has been striking out more, he is still only striking out 24.1% of the time. it really does look like the K rate problem has been fixed. He just needs to run into a couple of pitches. And the thing that I saw from Christopher Morel during the series was the Marlins just fed him a steady diet of changeups, and he couldn't figure out what to do with elite changeups.
Yeah, I mean, he's still young and learning the league. He's really only been in there. He's never even been in there a full year. We saw flashes of him in 2 years ago. Then he was down. He started down and then played his way onto the team by, what, May? Sometime in May came up.
Yeah, that's right. And
so, you know, he's still young. I mean, people are not that. You know, not a lot of guys come to the major leagues like a Chris Bryant does, kind of like a finished product, you know, in a way. In fact, Chris Bryant, those were his best years. If you look at it, 15, 16, and then it was.
And he's on the IL again, people. So,
yeah. So, but Morel, you know, this has been a rough spot. It looks like he's in between. Like, I think he's probably working on something. I know that you have a new hitting coach again. Well, an old hitting coach coming back with the new hitting coach in why am I drawing a blank right now?
John Maley.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
So so maybe he's working on something. It would make sense that if you're trying to take more pitches that you would end up in between. I've noticed he's popping up a lot of balls, which makes me wonder if he's just kind of getting under it as he swings for the fence, and it's like a launch angle thing he's trying to work on with the swing. The swing still looks vicious as hell. But, you know, he'll like take strike two right down the middle and do weird stuff like that, you know, and just seems a little like he's guessing wrong. He's swinging up. I don't know what he's out. Something's wrong. Something's not working, and that's kind of my identification of what's going on. But he's shown to be a player that will work out. I mean, the man was in a freaking horrifying car accident and came back to be able to. You know this about Christopher
Murray? It's not a car accident. He ran through a plate glass window.
Yeah, plate glass window.
But that's not a car. I don't know why where you got.
I thought it happened during an accident on a car.
No, my understanding is that he was coming out of like a rest stop area in the Dominican Republic and was running to catch the bus that was about to leave, and the door didn't open. Like, you know, they'll have those doors are supposed to open. The door like closed on him is my understanding of the accident.
Oh my God, I didn't know that.
And like plate glass damage on his glove hand. Yeah, this is actually one of those things that people don't realize about Christopher Morel, and I think it's like critical to the understanding story of him. I remember looking it up after Wilson Contreras when Christopher Morel got called up was just like, you have no idea what that guy's been through. He's worked so hard. He's the best, whatever. Like, Wilson really took Morel under his wing.
Yeah.
Because of that. And yeah, so it was like tendon damage in his glove hand. I mean, he can't feel his glove hand. Like, he, you know, we give him grief about his defense, and there are reasons for it. But also some damage near his eye. And the fact that he's playing at the level he's playing at is incredible. I think that the sky is the limit with him, but it's truly a miracle that we have Christopher Morel here doing Christopher Morel things at all. I'm just not worried about him long-term because of that. Like, the man will figure out how to hit a changeup. You know what I mean?
I think so. I mean, and you've got to give it a shot because the tools are so exciting.
Yes,
and so you got to let him have chance to work it out because when I pulled up his baseball reference page, I was excited to see it says free agent 2029. I'm like, that's a long time from now. That's great. That made me really happy. The fact that he'll be here that long, you know, and he's already such a fan favorite. He's just about everybody's favorite. They paid all this money for Dansby, but everybody loves Christopher Morel.
Indeed, we do. Let's talk about some hot bats on the Cubs. Michael Busch continues to rake. He has a WRC plus of 190 over the last 2 weeks, flashing 311, 380, 689 during that time period. Alexander Canario is doing the best he can with the cup of coffee he's been given, flashing 308, 357, 615 with a WRC plus of 166. Nico Hoerner finally turning it on. He looked really good in that Marlins series, flashing 380, 418, 540 with a WRC plus of 164. Seiya Suzuki is on the IL, so we will skip over him for a second. But Miguel Amaya, who appears to be pushing Yan Gomes out of playing time at catcher and not a moment too soon, slashing 258, 303, 484 with a WRC plus of 117, rounds out your Cubs hot bats. Anything you want to talk about there,
Dan? Yeah, just Amaya. That's really great to see because, you know, he talked about injuries. He really suffered so many injuries in his young career. He should have been up by now as far as his clock ticking and his development on the schedule that he was on. So it's really great to see him doing great things. And, you know, I don't know about the catching as much. I don't know. The eye test for me seems average. Like he's an average framer, an average. I don't know what he doesn't seem to be yanking a lot of pitches. I guess the pitchers like working with him. You haven't really heard anything this way or that, but I mean, Kyle Hendricks is calling his own game, so you can't blame Amaya for that. So, you know, like.
So, the metric I like for catchers these days is called catchers caught stealing above average. And it's one of these baseball savant Statcast metrics that tries to give you an idea of, like, how well they control the running game from a variety of perspectives. So, you know, the caught stealing percent, the throw, whether their throw is above average or not, all of those types of things, whether they steal runs, that type of stuff. So this is not about framing. This is just about, like, their ability to control the running game. Miguel Amaya is currently ninth on that metric. Admittedly, it's, like, super small sample sizes. So Miguel Amaya is, like, tied there with one caught stealing above average. So, you know, but right around, you know, Corey Lee, Sal Perez, Nick Fortes, JT Realmuto, nothing terrible going on there. Definitely better than Yan Gomes, who is down the list a little bit at zero. My thing with Amaya here is more Yan Gomes has looked a little cooked at the plate. And this is not my, like, love of Wilson Contreras shining through. This is like Yan Gomes is a 36, 37-year-old catcher, and squatting that much over the course of your career catches up to you at some point in time. It would not stun me if Yan Gomes is just not the hitter that he has been in the past anymore.
No, and what stunned me is that he was the hitter that he was last year.
Right. Yeah.
that was house money. I don't know. And we kind of saw that with Miguel Montero. It has very similar vibes to it. So, but yeah, not a moment too soon that Miguel Amaya is emerging. And as a great hitter, too, because they've been burying him down at the bottom of the order. But, you know, don't sleep on Miguel Amaya at the plate because, you know, even if he is the 8 or 9 hitter, that's probably just to give him less at bat so he can focus on catching, you know, so he's not constantly running the bases and in the game and stuff. Although he has been because he hits doubles all the time. He's my sister's wife's favorite player right now. She's a new Cub fan. She's new to the game here. She's not a Chicagoan. She's just moved here, turning into a Chicagoan in front of my eyes. And her favorite player is Miguel Amaya. She's like, that guy's always doing something great.
Love it.
Yeah. So
great, great favorite player to have.
Yeah. So, so far so good with Miguel. And so I'm glad he made the hot hitters list.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Astros coming to town. The Cubs are off today. We're recording on Monday. Tuesday night, Jordan Wicks will face off against JP France. These are according to the RotoWire probable pitcher grid list, by the way, because everything is listed as TBD on MLB right now. So this could change. Jameson Taillon facing off against Justin Verlander, who just came back, started the season on the IL, came back right in time to face the Cubs. Thanks, y'all. And then Shota Imanaga against Ronel Blanco, who already has a no-hitter this season. Danny, what do you see in these pitching matchups?
I mean, Astros, they didn't start out so great, but they're just tough. They're the Astros. And, you know, you brought it up before that it's, you know, it's a tough start to the season. It's hard. It's front-loaded. And they're going to have to keep running this gauntlet, and they're going to have to do it banged up without their best hitter, without their best pitcher, with their bullpen decimated and their closer demoted. They're just going to have to keep going and running the gauntlet, and it's not going to get any easier. And it's going to be cold at Wrigley again. It's going to rain tomorrow. Like, so there might be a little weather they're going to have to play through. So, hey, that's baseball. Go out there, boys, and earn your money and get me some wins.
Yeah, let's talk through some of these Astros hot hitters again. This is over the last 2 weeks. Jose Altuve leading the list, slashing .333, .415. 509, two home runs and three stolen bases in that time, a WRC plus of 174, followed by Yordan Alvarez, who might be the best hitter on the planet, slashing .315, .403, .519, WRC plus of 169. Kyle Tucker, slashing .250, .391, .500, WRC plus of 159. Mauricio Dubon is on this list, slashing .325, .357, .450, WRC plus of 137. The list goes on, y'all. Jeremy Pena, it's slashing .345, .367, .414. WRC plus of 130. An old friend alert, Victor Caratini, who's only catching about 25-30% of games, but he is slashing .273, .273, .500 with a WRC plus of 120. That's definitely powered by the home run he's hit in the last couple of weeks.
Wow. Scary.
It is. It looks a little bit scarier than the Cubs right now. I'm not going to lie.
Well, the only thing you can hang your hat on is that baseball is going to baseball.
True.
And that sometimes when a team is doing real good, that's just the time that they're going to start doing bad. So
let's hope that the Astros start doing bad just in time for the Cubs. After the Cubs play three against the Astros at Wrigley Field, they will head to Boston, where Javier Assad will face off against Cutter Crawford. Kyle Hendricks, who we talked about at length earlier, will face off against Josh Winkowski. He of the Wrigley Field is a stock standard ballpark comment, so be sure to get your Josh Winkowski jokes ready for Fenway Park is a stock standard ballpark joke series. And then Jordan Wicks will face off against Tanner Houck, who has been unbelievable this season so far. What do you see in these pitching matchups?
I don't really know. To be honest, I mean, I know what the Cubs are going to throw at you, but I mean, as far as the Red Sox, you're the expert there.
I mean, I can tell you that Crawford and Houck are two of the young arms in Boston that I'm most interested in. And Houck has just been unbelievable so far this season. He's been exactly what people thought he could be over the last few years. Winkowski is kind of like their Javier Assad. He's like their number six guy who's in the rotation right now because of injuries and that type of stuff. And so that Hendo Winkowski game could wind up being quite the barn burner.
All right. That's Friday.
Yeah. Friday, Saturday, I think.
Yeah. And so, you know, it's like we face the Red Sox every year now. So it's not as special as it once was, except for the fact that I'm going to be at the game on Sunday. So like, I'm really excited to see like that. I really want to sit on the Green Monster, but it's like $300.
Yeah, that's super pricey.
Yeah. And I guess unless you're in the first two rows of it, that it's not even a good seat is what I've been told as well. It's like, just like the novelty of sitting up there. And I'm
I don't know. I've never sat on the Monster.
I kind of think it's cooler to look at the Monster than to sit on it. You know what I mean?
I mean, my favorite. So the one thing I will say about Fenway is their right field corner seats are all angled weird. Like, they're not angled towards home plate. So you kind of wind up twisting the whole time. So that's a little bit strange, but it's a great park. It's historic. It's a lot of fun. Very much feels like Wrigley Field East. Let's talk about some of their hot hitters at the moment. And Boston is kind of banged up right now. So this could be interesting. Rob Refsnyder is a part-time outfielder who's been playing a little bit more because of injuries. Slashing .308, .400, .769 with a WRC plus of .222 over the last 2 weeks. Tyler O'Neill, who is actually on the concussion protocol at the moment after running into Rafael Devers and getting like 8 stitches in his forehead, has been on fire. He has 7 home runs so far this season. The last 2 weeks, he's slashing .261, .414, .652, WRC plus of .199. I really hope that that concussion doesn't linger because Tyler O'Neill has been doing exactly what everyone wants former Cardinals outfielders to do when they leave St. Louis.
Yeah.
Willier Abreu, also playing a lot more because of injuries, is slashing .333, .442, .556 with a WRC plus of .186. Love it when you call up a guy and he just rakes. Tristan Casas was their fourth best hitter, but he just hit the IL with a strained rib cage, which I don't even know how long that injury lasts, but it's definitely going to be through this Cubs series. Connor Wong is their catcher. He's slashing .313, .324, .594 with a WRC plus of .153. And just making the list here is Masataka Yoshida, slashing 256, 319, 419 over the last 2 weeks with a WRC plus of 110.
Yeah, I mean, they're 13-10. They're behind the Yankees and the Orioles right now. They're 3-7 at home, so that's good for us, I guess. But, I mean, the Red Sox, they always seem, even in the, you know, they're kind of known as, like, in a way, like the Cubs of the AL. But that's an unfair comparison because the Cubs actually always stunk. And then they would every now and again somehow sniff at a playoff spot. Whereas the Red Sox, they were close to winning it all a bunch. And they never really stunk except for this year and that year. They were mostly competitive. And it was the Cubs that were uncompetitive. So, like, the fact that the Red Sox are in the toughest division, I mean, everybody's got to play the AL East now. That's just how it is. And so good luck to Godspeed to all other freaking takers, because it's tough now. It's a tougher schedule for most teams in the major leagues. Not only do you have to travel more to go out east and play these teams and see all these different stadiums, but you have to do that, but you also have to play really tough divisions that you didn't always have to play every year. So sometimes you're like, oh, we'll go rack up wins against the crappy AL West or whatever it would be that year, that with the team or the Central this year, the AL Central. You know, you'd think you could rack up wins because you had them, but now you got everybody. So it's tougher. And this is one of those tougher series. If the Cubs take one game, I'll be happy.
I'd love to see them take more than one, but yeah, you're right. This is a tough series. Going into Fenway is not an easy place to play. That left field defense situation is honestly like the stuff of potential nightmares, regardless of who's out there, right? Like, honest, I might put Mike Tauchman in left for this series just because playing balls off the monster is really no joke. That's why Fenway is such a great place to hit. And you need a guy who is not going to run around in circles and look like a fool out there. And I'm not sure Happ or Canario is that guy.
Yeah, well, Hap might be okay, but yeah, you're right. Tauchman might be the best choice because he played for the Yankees too. So he's been at Fenway probably already a bunch. I don't know if Hap's really played there, but you know, if Hap is back and his hamstring's okay, then he'll be out there because he's not on the IL.
But Danny, let me just I remember when the Red Sox traded for Kyle Schwarber, which, by the way, the Red Sox really should have just like extended Kyle Schwarber and let him be their first baseman, because nothing has ever fit as well as Kyle Schwarber in Boston. It was just like great energy. But man, it was painful watching Kyle Schwarber attempt to play left field at Fenway Park. Like it might have been one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life.
Well, I mean, it's entertainment, right? So
when he moved to first base, I was like, thank God. And he wasn't very good there either, but much better than him playing left field.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know why the Cubs drafted him, to be honest, just to win the World Series, I guess, because he really never was before the DH existed, he was never really.
Dude, Kyle Schwarber was great, and the Cubs did not appreciate what they had, and it drives me crazy. I'm happy to see him thriving in Philadelphia with a team that has some, you know, like, you got Bryce Harper over there, you got Nick Castellanos, like, the team's got some grit. I like it.
Yeah.
But it should have been us, man. It should have been the gritty Cubs led by the Schwarbino that's a rant for another day. Danny, where can people find you ranting about these Cubs games this week?
Well, one place you can find me is at Fenway Park next Sunday, which I don't know the exact, it was the 28th of April. I'll be at Fenway Park. I don't know where I'm sitting. And I'll also be at least at one of the games at Citi Field on Monday or Tuesday. I'm planning on seeing Tuesday is probably the better day because our friend Ken Schultz will be there.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So we can hang out, and it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm just going on a little trip, visiting Lyle in Portland, Lyle Aker, my old podcast partner in Portland, Maine. It's going to be freaking nice. Get away for a couple days, see some baseball games, celebrate his 50th birthday, and it's just going to be a blast. So you can find me at Sunranto and all those places on my Cubs travels.
Awesome. You can find me at BCB_Sarah. You can find my Cubs writing at BleedCubbyBlue.com. You can find me this week hanging out at Wrigley Field, next week watching the games from afar on my couch. We will be back. Danny, are we going to be back next week, or are we going to have to push the show a couple weeks out into the future? given your travels.
No, I think we could maybe figure out sometime next Monday to talk, and I can regale you with my tales from Fenway. Maybe we could go. It might have to be like a remote kind of hookup, and I'll be on my phone or something like that, but we'll get it done. I might be driving to New York at, you know, when we do this, if it's at the same time.
We'll figure it out.
People need to know.
You should have a lobster roll for me, and you're an East Coaster, so what the advice I'm about to give you is something you probably already know, but our listeners may not know. When you get the lobster roll, you got to get it Connecticut style, because the mayo is the worst, but the hot butter, hot lobster bread style is great. So,
style
lobster roll.
All right. Well, my buddy owns a restaurant out there, so I'm just going to eat what he puts in front of me. But the last time I went to Portland, Maine to visit him, which was a bunch of years ago, I went with Michael Cotton. He got too drunk and fell down a hill. It was hilarious. But the last time I went there, I ate a lot of lobster rolls, and it was all freaking delicious. I don't remember if it had mayonnaise or butter, but I just know I loved it.
Yeah, I like the butter ones more than the mayo ones, but that's a personal choice. Let me know what you think. Let us know what you think when you get back. And hopefully the Cubs can do some damage against the Astros and hold their own against the Red Sox. It is the tough part of the schedule. We'll be back to talk about it all next week.